This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
How big was Javi Baez's walk-off single that prevented the Cubs from losing two straight to the Phillies? Does the 3-2 victory mask growing concerns over the bullpen and the bats with runners in scoring position?
Yes, yes, and yes, and yes. I think that it was a huge, huge victory. If it hadn't been Javi, it could have been someone else, right? I mean, you get second and third and no outs. That's a great way to start to kind of get the walk off going, right? Isn't that fair enough? So, but he did it, and he got it. You know, it was fun, and a couple times on the broadcast they talked about is he going to be in this situation? He's going to be next? No, they're pitch hitting someone else. So you're kind of like, he's not playing, and then to see him, that was great to see him get that done. It does mask growing concerns over the bullpen. I mean, it's a problem. Let's be honest about it. And, boy, they did it again. They loaded the bases and got nothing out of it early. You know, they really need to take advantage of some of the stuff that's going on here. But the fact of the matter is, it's a great win, and you feel good about wins. And masking things is what it's all about at this point in the season.
It definitely was a big win for the Cubs. It did mask some of those things. C.J. Edwards struggled a little bit. Kinsler probably deserved better. That was, you know, the last couple nights they've had hits that have gone against them, but they haven't been like shots.
Right.
They were against the wall, and you thought, oh boy, they were kind of seeing eye singles, and still the bullpen came, you know, faltered and let them down again. So yeah, I think when you take away from last night the walk-off victory, the fifth of the year, the Cubs have a team that, you know, refuses to quit, and all those things are positive. But yeah, it did sort of mask the bullpen, and also the fact that heading into the ninth inning, the Cubs had been 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. That's a problem, but good teams find a way to win, and I think the Cubs are, you know, finding their rhythm here, and what they're doing is they're winning these one-run games, and that does matter. And I think that you saw last night a lot of things why both of these teams are going to be around in October. I enjoyed watching the game last night. I watched the ESPN version just for a change of pace, and Eduardo Perez I thought was pretty good. I didn't get the same sense of, like, you know, when the Sunday night crew were like waiting for something to be said that we're going to analyze or pick apart. But yesterday I felt like the insight was pretty good, and from Chris Bryant's base running to Javi Baez in the clutch to everything in between, that was a fun experience. And yeah, it may mask the fact that the Cubs have some issues, but every team's got issues. The Cubs got their fifth walk-off win.
What'd you think of Tim Kirkjian in the booth?
I think he's, you know, in fairness, I have a lot of respect for what he does, Joe, but I don't know if that's the greatest fit for him. I think
right. He
plays a good role in yes, what he's used to doing, you know, the reporting, the analysis.
His voice, like, is too crackly. You know what I mean?
Kind of chuckle when he talks.
Yeah, he kind of is going through puberty at all times. He's got a little Teddy Greenstein in him.
And totally a local, provincial comment, Joe, but I was waiting for Ravage to address
yes,
his report on Javi and Addison Russell, and unless I missed it, he never did.
Yeah, same. As Javi was hobbling to first, I was wondering, is the same decision made by Joe Maddon a year ago? Does any part of last night in that moment go back to the urgency that Theo's talked about? And Theo will be on this afternoon on The Score at 3:30. Nice win. You take advantage. Second and third place in the division, lose last night, Cardinals postponed. Oh my, have they been awful over the last few weeks. It doesn't mask anything with the bullpen. We all know the top couple of weaknesses on this team goes out to the bullpen and the additions that they're going to have to make. But yes, it does mask the issues a little bit with the runners in scoring position. Now, twice in the last three games, they have gone 1-for-11. Last night, 1-for-11. Sunday night, 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So that is something to keep an eye on moving forward.
I would say, yeah, big win last night. Anytime you can get a walk-off in that fashion, especially when it comes against a fellow first-place club, a club that you might run into again in October, I think that does carry more meaning than a walk-off against, you know, the Marlins or even the Pirates, even somebody in the division, because I don't think that they're going to be sticking around like the Phillies might. So I think in that regard, definitely a big win. Always exciting when your team can pull it out in that fashion with a hobbled Javi. But there are concerns over the bullpen. They've been up and down, and this isn't just exclusive to the Cubs. I mean, every team in Major League Baseball is always going to be looking for more consistency in their bullpen and adding pieces as the season goes along, seeing what fits, seeing what doesn't fit. That's not just a Cubs thing. That's just a contender-wide thing, a baseball-wide thing. And the thing with runners in scoring position, I mean, that's been a problem for the Cubs for years. Even in 15, 16, 17, you know, the heyday, I guess, unless we're still in the heyday now. I'm not really sure how to define that. But you've seen this team, whether Theo describes it as the offense being broke or they can't get the guy in from third with less than two outs or leaving runners on base, which we saw a ton two nights ago when they lost that game at game one of this series. That has been a constant for the Cubs throughout their quote-unquote window here. So that's always going to be a concern where they're waiting for, you know, that big hit or they're waiting for that one clutch moment. And more often than not, they will get it because this is a really good team with a lot of really good hitters. But it does kind of fade in and out sometimes, and that can be a concern because it can happen over long stretches of time.
But I think we're still in the heyday.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think this is probably still the heyday. You're right.
I mean, who doesn't like instant gratification? And that's what you got last night. As soon as he comes up to bat, first pitch he sees, boom, it's over with. They walk off. But there's a lot of masking going on. It's a nice win against a team that you could play in the postseason. But the way this bullpen is set up right now, that is not a postseason. This is not a postseason bullpen. That was something, David, you know, you talked about. I also took in the ESPN broadcast for a couple of different reasons. But one, because it was a different out-of-town group. I don't remember hearing Ravitch and those guys, Eduardo Perez and Kirchen, talk about it. I also was waiting for Ravitch to mention what he got wrong. I didn't think he would do it, but maybe I thought it might get brought up somehow, some way. But they talked about how, you know, how starters and bullpen, they did a whole thing about how different it is now and how important these bullpens are, and starters aren't expected to do so much, and it just... It's still an issue, right? It's still an issue for the Cubs, the back end of that ball.
And didn't you think, especially with Russell playing shortstop, they would address that report?
Exactly. Then there was that play. It didn't end up costing them, but it was, I believe, a leadoff single by the Phillies pitcher on a play that Baez, I mean, routinely makes. We were talking about that yesterday, Molly, right? The flashy plays versus the common plays. But that he doesn't – let's put it this way. Baez gets to that ball, and because his arm is so much better than Russell's, he throws that guy out. Russell almost got to the ball, but I think even if Russell would have gotten to the ball the way his momentum was going and his arm is not as superior as Baez, he would not have been able to throw him out last night.
Do we know that Ravitch was wrong on that? Because he did say eventually. There's a lot of baseball left.
To be continued,
so that
Joe.
Could be the plan.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Somebody should ask him about it. Somebody should ask Joe. Did Justin Verlander's no-hit stuff for most of Tuesday's loss justify the second straight no-show by White Sox hitters? What can the Sox do to spark the offense, or does it seem like they have no expectation of beating the Astros?
Well, speaking of masking, I went to the White Sox website to get the box score to find out just how many innings Dylan Covey pitched, and it was four innings and gave up four earned runs. But the headline says, Abreu wins big battle with Verlander. And he did.
How's that for some spin?
You know, you lose a game, but you get
White House the needs one hit. Wrote that.
Exactly. 5-1, but the home run was the only hit the White Sox got, but it was against Verlander, so it's worth a headline. I don't know what this series, their expectations were. I don't think they were high, but I think that they certainly are getting what they expected, and that's not much. And you go in there on Monday, and you have the bullpenning approach, and you, I guess, you think you did okay because it wasn't a blowout. Then last night, you have very few expectations against Verlander. Offense is struggling. Understandable. Aloy comes back. He struck out three times last night. Made a nice catch. Made a really nice catch in left field, so that was maybe a bright spot, but Jose Ruiz was sent down after the game. A corresponding roster move is expected today. I hope it's a pitcher. I don't know what it will be. Maybe if it's an offensive guy, maybe Daniel Palka gets a call back because he's been hot at Charlotte. I'm not quite sure, but because the last couple games, I'm not quite sure what the Sox, as they entered this week, which I thought was could potentially be a pretty defining week, exciting week. They have an opportunity against the Astros. They have an opportunity against the Twins. But you haven't seen much in the first two games. I understand it's against one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball. But expected a little more.
Yeah, I didn't. I think that the White Sox have gaping holes in their lineup. They have gaping holes in their rotation. I think that they have gaping holes. And they do a lot of, you know, digging a hole and filling it back in and moving over to dig another hole. This is the best team in baseball. It's a team that's on fire. This is a step up in class, and you know, okay, fair enough that Verlander was so good that you really were going to be very hard pressed to beat him. But I actually go in every night thinking that they got a chance to win, and Ricky's boys don't quit. So I'm, you know, very interested in following some of the young guys and hoping beyond hope. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday and talking about some of the minor leaguers, and things just aren't going as well as you'd hope at this point. But what are you going to do? It is what it is.
So I guess we're back in Justin Verlander's prime. I mean, this is a guy that's just going to walk right into the Hall of Fame. And no matter what the result of the Sox game is, something you look at every day is, okay, what did Mankata do? Now that Aloy's back out there, what'd he do? And Tim Anderson. And for the second straight game, every guy went 0-for. And then last night, what bothers you is those guys I'm talking about, you didn't really seem to have much of a shot. They weren't competing. Seven strikeouts between Mankata and Aloy Jimenez last night. Expectation, no. I think the expectation is, can you win one? Can you take one of these four against the Astros? It just set up like a really rough week for the White Sox. 2-5, 1-6, going to Minnesota next. So I haven't had any expectation. And then here comes Ivan Nova tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Garrett Cole. Maybe you can dream about next year with seeing Garrett Cole on the mound.
I was going to say, it gets a lot easier with Garrett Cole on the hill tonight against one of the other fantastic acquisitions that the White Sox made this past offseason in Ivan Nova. I also noticed that, David, the Jose Ruiz demotion. Maybe it's Ross Detweiler time.
Ooh,
already.
Yes.
Could he be prepping himself up for a start this weekend?
Rottweiler
versus the Twins. Oh my God! Maybe I won't make that trip up to Minnesota this weekend after all. Listen, the Astros are, like everybody said, they're the best team in baseball. They're 18-4 at home. Even if the White Sox were a better team, everybody's struggling down in Houston to do anything against that team. And you got to face Verlander. You got to face Garrett Cole. You got to face this offense, even without Springer, even without Altuve. They are absolutely stacked top to bottom. So, listen, the White Sox, they've played well at times this season. They've played pretty well against Cleveland, who's, you know, a team over 500. But this is a step up in class. I think you have to take this series with a grain of salt. A little bit concerning, you know, just for the fact that, Molly, like you said, you know, it's only a couple of games each week you could really kind of invest yourself in the White Sox right now, because unless it's a Giolito day or a Lopez day, and even the last one's a little bit of a stretch for me, I mean, it's hard to invest yourself in three and a half hours of this game when you know they're going to be sending out bums, you know, like Ivan Nova on the hill or whomever else they pulled off the scrap heap. So I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to do something with the starting rotation. And I'm not saying necessarily you got to sign Dallas Keuchel, you got to make a trade for, you know, a veteran or anything, but you have to do something, because you went into the season with a sketchy rotation, and now the injuries have made it even more sketchy and barren, and something has to be done, because it's only May 22nd here. And maybe Dylan Cease is coming at some point later in the year, but that seems like a long way away right now. and you cannot keep punting on games like you have been, you know, with Dylan Covey and Ryan Burr and whomever else you toss out there.
But, Kevin, it was a snappy 253 last night.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. We all appreciate that.
I've been saying it all. The wins and losses for the team that resides at 35th and Shields doesn't matter. But what I would be disappointed in if I were a White Sox fan is the 7Ks between arguably two of the key cornerstones to the rebuild against a guy like Verlander. I mean, I didn't see the at-bats. I was watching the Cubs game. But I'm just, you know, working it bad. I mean, I'd like to go, I'm going to go back later. How many pitches did they foul some off? Were they swinging? And then as a Cubs fan, you just go back and you think about what might have been had they had the Cubs spent the money and signed Justin Verlander.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Was there anything that surprised or disappointed you with the Bears' 50-75 player reveal in the Dan and Don 100?
I like the Dan and Don 100.
That's good.
Nice
that
touch.
Works. Yeah.
Nice touch.
You know, I got to tell you, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the whole list, and you know, there are some of the current players that are on this list which surprised me a little bit when we're talking about, you know, 100 years of Bears football and the 100 greatest players. It's a little surprising to me, and I'm not, you know, taking shots at anyone. It just is a little surprising. I think the most controversial pick is probably Khalil Mack, because how many games did he play? Did he play 13 games?
I think 13 this year.
So that's not really a great sample size, but he is on a trajectory.
14
I'm sorry, okay. 14. Okay, well, then that makes sense.
Jesus, he should have been higher.
Makes perfect
that last
sense.
Game put him over the top.
Yeah. But I like Julius Peppers on the list. I like Khalil Mack on the list. I love that Wally Chambers is ahead of both those guys. Wally Chambers was, of course, a Rookie of the Year and made three Pro Bowls before going to Tampa. Is that right?
That was my something first like Bears that? Football card.
It was Wally Chambers.
Wally Chambers.
He was in an era where they were awful. He was by far the best thing they had. They drafted him in the first round, and he worked out for them. Didn't stay long, but there you have it. I thought that was kind of cool. I recognized a lot of these names. I've talked to a lot of these people. I was delighted to see Ed Obradovich at number 67, just because I like Ed so much. Damn it!
Would you love to hear him scream why he wasn't 66?
Oh, I don't think he would. I think he'd be pleased to be there.
Yeah, that's great. 67.
Yeah, it's great. And a lot of these guys are, you know, you just over the years you get to know a lot of guys that used to play for the Bears and that you covered, and you know, there's a lot of names on this list that I know and that people that I really like a lot. So I was genuinely pleased to see a lot of these names, and I thought it was. I kept thinking to myself, like, oh, I wouldn't have done that, and I wouldn't have done that. And then I started thinking about how hard it would be.
Yeah.
And, like, you'd really have to spend a lot of time going over the numbers and arguing it out and talking.
Write a book about it.
Talking to teammates and such, right? Talk to people who played with them and against them, and what is it that they did that made them so special. But I know those guys did that. I trust Don Pearson. I trust Dan Pompey. And I am not one to argue with them. So I love the list. I love talking about it. I think that there's some really good talking points with the whole thing. And again, Jim McMahon checks in at number 53, and your guy Cutler was at 85. So that's kind of interesting.
Big difference. What better way to celebrate a sports franchise's history than to argue about it?
Sure.
And that's the best way to do this. And I applaud the Bears for trotting this out now when they are going to be marking the 100th anniversary in June out at Rosemont. But, you know, Robbie Gould at 62. He's 9 spots ahead of Kevin Butler at 71. I get why. Jay Cutler being at 85 and Jim McMahon being at 53. Okay, because you're valuing a different thing here. You're putting winning ahead of, you know, the statistics. We get all that. You mentioned Wally Chambers. Khalil Mack at 60, just behind Julius Peppers. How would you characterize Julius Peppers as a Bear?
I thought he was a really good player as a Bear.
After a relatively, I mean, he had times where he was really very good and Pro Bowl caliber. Then there were other times maybe a slight disappointment.
I thought he was really good as a Bear, and I think that if he was a slight disappointment, it was because expectations were so high for him. I think he's
that's probably the best way to put it.
Freakish athlete.
He was
just an amazing talent.
Was he better Bear than James Big Cat Williams? I mean, that's a good debate, and yet he's ahead of him by five spots. Mm-hmm. This was a lot of fun. Tommy Harris at 73 reminds you of, you talk about unfulfilled potential. Tommy Harris was a really dynamic defensive tackle coming into the league, making an impact, the ideal fit for this defense in Lovie Smith's scheme. And yet, you know, he gets injured in 2006 and changes the fortunes of the playoffs for the Bears and never quite realized his potential because of injuries. I love it. I love there's a lot to debate. Khalil Mack's interesting, but the most intriguing names on that list were 74 and 75, the current Bears. Kyle Long at 74 and our guy, Akeem Hicks, at 75.
Yeah, this group of players, David, as you just mentioned.
Oh, check me out, man.
You think of what could have been if they could have stayed healthy. Tommy Harris. Kyle Long, I don't think he deserves on the list. Also, might throw Mike Brown in there, too, if he could have stayed healthy.
Yep.
What his career as a Bear could have been. And I like that they put Khalil Mack at 60, and you just kind of wonder, okay, if he can keep this going, how high can he get? What's the ceiling? Is he going to crack the top 10? Could he one day crack the top 5? How difficult that would be. How great his play would have to continue to be. Of course, the Jim McMahon was the big news here at 53, 32 spots ahead of Cutler. I did not agree with that. I don't think he's a 53rd best Bear of all time, a guy that wasn't available a lot due to all the injuries.
Only quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Steve Fuller could have won it that year, too. What? Hot
Where's
take.
He? Where's Fuller?
Les just did a 180 on the highway on the
Grabber.com. Worst Bears ever.
This list is the nicest thing I can say about this list is that it exists, and I'm sure that they've done a lot of hard work on this. And listen, don't get me wrong, Dan and Don know more about football than I will ever have, you know, a tenth of their knowledge. But it's just to compare eras and to compare positions and just everything all kind of mumbo-jumboed into one pot and trying to get 100 in a certain order here. Like, come on, Kevin Butler, I understand what team he was on, but is he the 71st best football player?
He was the all-time leading scorer on the Bears.
Are kickers even players? Should kickers even be on this list?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is Cody Parkey?
If the Bears had
top
Cody
five.
Cody Parkey doesn't even have a job right
had
now.
Had a kicker last year, this would be a different list.
If they had Kevin Butler last year, would they have done differently? Well,
yes.
I said if they had Jay Cutler last year, they'd have been in the Super Bowl, and I still maintain that. So you know what? This list has got people talking. It's got people debating. It's interesting on several
it's
levels.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun.
It's
grumpy.
It's a list.
Yeah, assuming you do a Sunday show this week, you better not talk about it unless you're going to poo-poo all over
it,
I guess. It's fun. I love talking about it. We've had fun talks on the air about it. We had fun talks off the air about it. You know, we were 85 Bear-centric post-show yesterday talking about this list, and one guy that I said from the offensive side, we figured we were all in agreement that 9 guys on the starting 11 from the defense were going to make it. And then we were trying to go through the offense and figure it out. And I thought now I'm thinking there might be another guy that's not going to make this list, because if Mark Bortz if his name hasn't been revealed, I'm thinking Mark Bortz isn't making this list now. Okay. I didn't think Keith Van Horn was going to make this list, and he made the list. And not only did he make the list, he's almost in the top half of the list. So I am, and Keith Van Horn was fine, but again, not necessarily one of the top 100 Bears of all time. I have no problem with the list. I get the Khalil Mack thing. You know, part of this I also think is what these players have meant to the franchise, right? The Bears had a magical year last year, and we all are in agreement that if Khalil Mack was not part of that team in 14, 13, how many, it didn't matter, okay? If he wasn't there, if they had a wins above replacement or all this stuff in football, okay, maybe they do, and I'm not aware of it, shockingly, he would be a big part of that. So I understand why he is on this list.
He's already historic.
Absolutely. And when you're talking 25, 30 years from now about the Bears of the 2000s, okay, his name will come up as a big part of the reason why they played in a postseason game that year.
I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
Does the Todd Frazier versus Adam Eaton feud bring clarity to what went wrong with the 2016 White Sox? And does it help explain how the current rebuild came about?
Maybe. Now, my own list of Chicago athletes who have come at me in the locker room isn't a long one, but Adam Eaton is on it. And I have my own experience with him and Pat Ground that it's easy for me to understand what's going on here. It's also easy for me to take a side. Todd Frazier, I'm all team Frazier.
Oh, I said that yesterday.
Adam Eaton, just the more he talks,
What
did Ozzie say last night?
He said on NBC Sports Chicago that
baseball night
nobody
in America.
Like you in the White Sox clubhouse.
No one like you.
And he's right. He's right. I don't know if it has anything to do with the 2016 fortunes. That was not going to be a team that was going to contend anyway. But the more you hear. They did start strong.
And they made the huge trade to try to.
Was chemistry jump on their that? Undoing? I don't know. Maybe.
They made the big trade.
Maybe.
James Shields.
But I just. It's easy to understand when you hear Adam Eaton go at it with Todd Frazier and you read Scott Greger in the Daily Herald talk about. He asked Robin Ventura about what the time that they reportedly came to blows, and Robin said, "What? Which time?" and then Greger also reported something I didn't know. But
I said that to you this morning. That was fantastic.
About Eaton. Yeah, Eaton arranged his.
He had a meeting, a team meeting, where he wanted them to vote him the Roberto Clemente Man of the Year.
So, come on. That tells you.
Well, let's have a meeting so you vote me an award.
Me.
You got an idea.
Enough about me.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about me. So
enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
Exactly. Team Frazier, all the way.
Listen, I got to tell you, what's amazing is that I had a flashback to 2016 and all the stories people are referencing. What a horrible, wretched, awful season. They started that season strong to the point where they did make a trade for James Shields.
Great April.
And they gave up. They gave up. Tatis Jr. to get James Shields, a move that you regret to this day, okay? And a move that that was just god-awful.
But they had to get over the void that Drake LaRoche
Well, that's left. Where I was going next. That whole thing, I remember going to training camp and talking to Adam LaRoche.
Drake, which is crazy enough as a 14-year-old if you look at that, but the kid was so tremendous.
That's just the dumbest thing that's ever been on a radio station ever. That might be the dumbest statement that a grown man has ever made in baseball. And believe me, that covers so much ground. It's shocking. But I remember going to camp the year before when he first got here, and his kid was standing next to him, and he was standing, leaning on this bat and talking. And, you know, it was just so weird that they had given the kid a locker and – he's out running the bases with him, and the kid was like his shadow. And I was kind of like, you know, doesn't that kid go to school? I asked someone with the White Sox, like, is that kid? And they were like,
we don't believe in book learning.
We had the same question. Like, we were kind of surprised by it, but he said that, you know, he was like that when he was a player. He got to hang around with his dad. And, you know, so it was this weird thing. And then by all accounts, was it Jimmy Rollins who came in that year?
Yes. Yep.
And he was kind of like, hey, what is the child doing locker room, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure, you know, he has some gravitas. I'm sure there were a lot of players that were like, why does it take your son to work forever day, right? It's not a day. It's take your son to work season.
Why is this kid next to me when I'm coming out of the shower?
It's just so bizarre. It's so weird. A 14-year-old kid in the locker room. I love my son. I don't think I'd want him here every day with me. I think the eye rolls and the yawning would probably get to me at some point if I had to wake him up this early and bring him in to listen to me talk.
You get enough of that for me.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard enough with Kevin. It's just super, super bizarre. And then the Chris Sale chopping up the jerseys. And I mean, go back to that season. And that's how we wound up here. That's how we wind up in whatever baseball hell they're in, because all the guys they have are all hurt. And then meanwhile, I think one of the things that's underscored by playing the Astros is that team's not going away anytime soon. That's a really good team. So you got to overcome them, and you got to overcome the Red Sox with all their money and all of their expertise in what they're doing. And don't forget, the Yankees have a bunch of young guys and tons of money. So it's like, it just feels like you're in this terrible situation that started with that team. And all of this, the two boys barking at each other, is just a reminder of how the hell we got here.
I was so close to removing 2016 White Sox completely from my brain, and then everything comes flooding back. What's dust up happened the other day between Frazier and Eaton. And not only did you have this kid hanging around, a leader in the clubhouse, and Drake LaRoche, the guy retires. Oh, I quit. My son can't be around. I quit. Jimmy Rollins doesn't like my kid here every day. I'm done. And the sale. And then you look to the leader, right? This is a locker room that needed leadership. Robin Ventura, the guy that didn't even want to be the manager that year.
The reluctant manager.
So I guess we're saying it was a blessing in disguise because it got you here. A lot of Sox fans wanted the rebuild. Or would you prefer rolling it back with Sale and Quintana? Because they proved, the front office proved, that they could not surround those players with enough talent to win, or at least the right mix of players.
Of course, yeah. They proved a couple different times that this regime couldn't build a contender, and it's the same story with
it'd be a good team now if you had Sale and Quintana.
I don't agree with that.
They'd have the top two pitchers there, and then you'd be laughing.
I mean, it's the same story with the Bulls as it is with the White Sox. Just the same people getting the same chances over and over again for whatever reason. The one thing that I kind of, and I, you know, obviously I agree with all you guys, Adam Eaton's a total, you know, weirdo, and Connor McKnight, who hosts the midday show here, was doing pre and post for the White Sox that season. So I was hearing all of these things, you know, some that came out and some that did not come out of the clubhouse. But one thing about this story that kind of befuddled me yesterday was that just all of a sudden yesterday, people were talking about this big fight, this dust up, I guess, that Eaton and Frazier had in the clubhouse. Why wasn't that reported 3 years ago? I mean, apparently everybody that covered the team knew about it, but now just 3 years ago, we're learning about it now.
I think it was reported that his locker was moved. Okay. I don't know if the
source he claimed that it was because there was a cooling vent that was hitting him, but it was actually, they'd apparently
he was so full of
it.
Nonsense. He was so full of hot air.
Yeah. I mean, Todd Frazier is certainly no saint anyway. He's just, you know, your normal baseball dude. But Adam Eaton is just, what an idiot. What a weird guy and a weird idiot.
Yeah, I'm on Team Frazier as well, even though I'm more in stature of Team Eaton, I guess. And I'm a barker and a loud mouth and all that kind of stuff. You know, the other thing, if you listen to the score enough, you find out that, you know, the reason why reporters don't ask questions that we all necessarily want answered is because, you know, it might break up the scrum. You might not get access. The next time you go to that player, he might not talk to you. So you don't report things because you're worried about the ramifications of what the report might bring up. And here's what I don't like, though, is that then people start jumping in like, oh, yeah, duh. Oh, yeah, duh. Oh, yeah, duh. Well, then, you know, shame on you for not reporting it, right? Why the oh, yeah, duh, or I could have told you that, or why didn't you know that? You're not paying attention. We were paying attention from our side of things, and the people inside didn't give us that information. So, you know, whatever. It's fun audio, and we'll play it for you later, and I don't think it has much to do about the rebuild necessarily. I mean, the pitching staff, Molly, you're right, but I mean that lineup, the everyday players of that group, that wasn't going to get you to the promised land. So I don't think it's a apples to apples thing.
You know, you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
Have a good night.
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Has Kevin Durant's reputation been damaged by the Warriors' run without him? Is he a legitimate NBA champion or a guy that had to play with a great team to make it? If Durant leaves, who's more likely to get back to the NBA Finals, the Warriors or Durant's new team?
I like this a lot. I think there's a lot of meat on that bone. I think they're unbeaten, right, since Durant got hurt. And I think that is a byproduct of everyone having to raise their game and having to do something more But they've even suffered an injury beyond that with Andre Iguodala, who was moved into the starting lineup. So I think it speaks volumes about the way that Stephen Curry was subjugating his game to Kevin Durant. I think it speaks volumes about the way that the Splash Brothers plus Dre are so damn good, Steph, Clay, and Dre. And they have been through all the wars, and they know how to win. You know, you go through these things and you have an understanding of what it takes to be a champion that they just don't even know where to begin to understand what to do. And these guys share the ball and they move the ball and they're playing great basketball in part because Durant isn't there, because they have to make up for it. It would be very interesting to know how that would work over the course of an NBA season, because then you'd hit a stretch where someone would be down and you wouldn't have that extra guy and you wouldn't have an ability to overcome that. So I'm not going to say that Kevin Durant is strictly a passenger on a championship team, but he came to a championship team and he made them even better. And he made that championship team a dynasty, because that's what we're looking at right now, guys. This is a five consecutive run to a title. I think what only the, you know, other than the Boston Celtics in basketball history, other than a team like, was it the Islanders that did it? In the modern era, you know, you just don't see it. You just don't see teams being able to win like that in any sport, to get to that many titles in any sport. And part of it is because they added a league MVP to a group that already had won a title. So I'm not going to diss Kevin Durant. I think he's a great player. I think this is a really fun question, though. If he leaves, who's more likely to get back to the NBA Finals? I'm going to say the Warriors over Durant. Because, you know, they also seem to be able to go out and find players that perform roles around these guys. And maybe somebody else wants to be the next man up. Maybe somebody else wants to go there in order to win a title or two. And I think if Durant is going to New York, that's starting from scratch. That is an operation that needs a lot of work. Ditto if he ends up with the Nets or the Clippers or whoever else they're talking about. It's a project.
Well, there's no doubt that the Warriors are the odds-on favorite to go back to the NBA Finals with or without Durant. So whoever he goes to, his new team is going to be rebuilding in some degree. You don't think he's going to be a plug-and-play guy on a team that's championship caliber. That just doesn't work out that way. So the Warriors are certainly going to be more likely to get back to the Finals. If his reputation has been damaged, it's not fair that it is. Pay attention to the results, not the reputation. The Warriors would have won with him. They're just learning to win without him. And that's one of the best stories in sports, because of the way they're playing without him and the way they look and everything. And that is great, but that is not necessarily fair to say, okay, Kevin Durant would have ruined this. He might have been different in terms of the method, but I don't know that it would have been in terms of the results. So is he a legitimate NBA champion? Absolutely. He's one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA. Unfortunate injury, unfortunate timing. The Warriors have responded, but I don't know that that says automatically they could have, you know, they're better off without him, or his legacy is tainted in any way. He's a great player.
Chris Bussard says Durant's worst nightmare is the Warriors win the championship without Durant. I just don't agree with that. That's nuts. This is a 10-time All-Star, 2-time Finals MVP, 8-time All-NBA player. I don't think it would damage his reputation either. He would still be a top three player in this league. And when you look at getting back to the NBA Finals, Warriors or Durant's team, I lean Warriors, but it all depends on where he goes. If it's the Knicks, no. But if he does go to Brooklyn in the East, and the Nets just had an above 500 season, now you're adding one of the best players in the game. Just think about the Bucks without Giannis and where they would be in the Eastern Conference. I think they could make a run if he goes to the East.
I think it's silly if you think Kevin Durant's reputation is hurt by the Warriors playing well without him. And I mean, the Warriors core has been in place and been so successful for so long now that, you know, they did win the damn thing without Kevin Durant at one point, which wasn't all that long ago. And I think this says more about Steph Curry stepping his game up as an all-time great. It says more about Steve Kerr, and maybe it's even possible that we underrated the job that he's done there in Golden State. But I think that even with or without Durant for the years to come, you got Steph and Clay and Draymond and Kerr there. They are going to be the favorite every single year until further notice.
Yeah, I don't think his reputation has been damaged at all. I think it's interesting that they could win without him. I wonder if Durant could win without the Splash Brothers. That's the question that's TBD. But it's very interesting, and I will stand by the fact that I think the Warriors are more fun to watch without Kevin Durant. Okay, that doesn't mean they're better or worse, but I think they're more, the style is just different. When KD gets the ball, he does his little thing on the inside, right? And or if he's open on the wing, when he gets the ball, he's shooting it. He's a shooter. He's a catch and shoot kind of guy. Or I got the ball, make a little move when I'm in the lane, and that's what he does. It's not fantastic to watch, but it works.
All right, that's the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the Score.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.